The first time I realized the bank wasn't real, it wasn't because of the people. It wasn't the paperwork or the polite tone or the way the man in the suit smiled like he'd been trained to never show teeth. It was the floor. Real banks carry wear in them, even when they're polished. Years leave a dullness you can't buff away, a faint scuff that says, "Thousands of strangers have stood here, waiting for their turn to be judged." This floor didn't have that. It shone like a stage. I stood near the water station in a gray custodian shirt, with my name stitched over the chest, holding a mop that still looked unused. The woman at the counter signed her name at the bottom of a document, her hand shaking just enough to notice. She looked relieved, like she'd finally found the right person to fix something that had been closing in on her for months. Across from her, the banker leaned in with calm authority, tapping the page gently, guiding her like he was doing her a kindness. My phone vibrated in my pocket. A message from a number I didn't recognize told me to stay calm and keep acting natural. I slipped the phone away, forcing my face into something neutral. The banker looked up, greeted me by name, and asked me to wipe up a spill that didn't exist. His tone made it feel ordinary. In the reflection of the manager's office glass, I saw two men near the entrance, one of them recording. And I understood then that I wasn't there to clean. I was there to make the lie feel safe. I took the job because it sounded small. That's the truth that keeps circling when I try to pin down the moment everything slid out from under me. It wasn't pitched like danger. It wasn't framed as a scheme or a risk. It was framed like a nuisance. Like something temporary you do for money and then forget. A few hours, cash in an envelope, a uniform, a room. I told myself there were worse ways to spend a day. The call came the night before, from a blocked number. I was alone in my apartment, the kind of place where the walls feel too thin when you're quiet, eating cereal straight from the box because I'd stopped pretending I had rituals. The phone rang, and I almost ignored it. I don't usually answer unknown calls, but I did that night, like my hand moved on its own. The voice on the line was calm and measured. Not friendly exactly, but warm enough that you wanted it to be. He used my name without asking for it, which should have stopped me cold, but my brain didn't grab onto that detail until later, when it was too late to matter. In the moment, it felt like a minor shortcut, like we'd already done the introduction somewhere off screen. He said someone had recommended me, said I was reliable, said I didn't panic when things got unusual. I almost laughed, because if he had the wrong person, he had the wrong person in the most flattering way. I wasn't reliable. I was available. There's a difference, and people who know how to use you never confuse the two. He described the job in pieces. One day, a few hours. A presence role, he called it, like that phrase should mean something official. He said it was part of a corporate initiative, some kind of film training environment. I wouldn't need to memorize lines. I wouldn't need to do anything complex. Mostly I would just be seen, moving through a space, making it feel real. I asked the only question that mattered to me then. I asked how much it paid. Well, he named a number that sat perfectly between relief and necessity. Not enough to change my life, enough to stop my life from collapsing for a week, enough to make me feel like saying no would be irresponsible, like I was turning down oxygen. I told myself it wasn't my business what corporate people did. I told myself they didn't call strangers for illegal work. I told myself the uniform was a silly detail for realism. I told myself I could walk away if anything felt wrong. That last one was the lie I needed most. I slept poorly anyway, waking up before my alarm with my stomach tight, like I'd already been late for something important. The building sat in a business park on the edge of the city, a stretch of glass and concrete that always looked empty, even when it was full. The lobby smelled like fresh paint and disinfectant, too clean in a way that made my skin itch. The woman at the front desk had a tight smile and a ponytail that looked like it had been pulled back for the purpose of professional. She didn't ask for my ID. She didn't ask for confirmation. She slid a clipboard toward me with a single sheet of paper and a pen. The paper was a non-disclosure agreement with no logo, no letterhead, just dense blocks of text and a line at the bottom for my signature. My eyes skimmed the words without absorbing them. Confidential. Proprietary, legal action. I hesitated, and her smile didn't change. If you want to be paid, she said, sign. That sentence did something to my brain. It turned the whole situation into a transaction, instead of a choice. I signed, telling myself it was standard, telling myself I'd seen similar forms before. She took the clipboard away and handed me a plastic bag with the uniform inside. The gray shirt was stiff, new. Dark pants folded neatly. A name patch already stitched onto the chest. Miles, in red block letters. Seeing my name on a uniform I hadn't earned gave me a strange sense of distance from myself. Like I was being dressed as someone else. Like the person wearing this shirt wasn't going to be me, not really. Just a version of me that fit into someone else's plan. She pointed me toward a hallway and told me to change. In the bathroom mirror, I looked wrong, not because the uniform didn't fit, but because it fit too well, like it had been measured, like it belonged to the role more than it belonged to me. When I came back out, she handed me a janitor's cart. It was pristine, brand new mop head, empty spray bottles labeled in neat handwriting, blue cloths folded into perfect squares. Nothing on it looked used, which made the whole idea of cleaning feel theatrical. She told me to follow the hallway to the right. She said someone would meet me. At the end of the hallway, a door stood open, and beyond it was a bank. Not a makeshift desk with a sign. Not a small office dressed up. A full bank floor, teller counters, glass dividers, waiting chairs, brochure racks, a water station, a small flag in the corner. Even the wall plaque, Sterling Harbor Bank, member FDIC. Everything was arranged with a kind of obsessive correctness, like someone had studied banks the way people study paintings in museums. A man in a suit stepped out from behind the counter and approached me, like he'd been expecting me. He was handsome in the way people are handsome when they've been told to be. Hair neat, tie perfect, smile practiced but convincing. "Miles," he said, extending his hand. "Glad you could make it. I'm Evan." His grip was warm and firm. His eyes held mine steadily, like he was anchoring me in place. I told myself, that was a good sign. That meant confidence. That meant professionalism. That meant this was a normal job. He thanked me for helping. Explain the basics. Move around. Wipe surfaces. Look occupied. If someone asks, I'm maintenance. If anyone's near the water station, I make sure the floor is dry. He told me it was important the space felt alive. Realism, he said, like he was complimenting me. You being here makes it real. For a second, that sounded flattering, like I had value, like my presence mattered. Then it sounded hollow, like he wasn't talking about me at all, just the shape I made in a room. My phone buzzed in my pocket. I didn't expect it. I hadn't given my number to anyone here, not directly. When I pulled it out, there was a message from an unknown number, telling me to stay calm and follow instructions. No greeting, no explanation, just a command, written like it was a fact. I looked up. Evan's expression hadn't changed. He wasn't looking at my phone. He wasn't watching me for a reaction. He was just smiling, as if the message and my confusion were none of his concern. I put the phone away and told myself it was part of the job. Maybe the corporate people had a coordinator. Maybe they were managing the extras the way film sets do. The explanation was thin, but it covered the immediate panic enough for me to keep breathing. The first customer arrived, 10 minutes later, a woman in a sweater that looked too worn for the season. She held her purse with both hands like it was the last stable thing she had. Her eyes swept the room, not like she was admiring it, but like she was measuring the exits. When she approached the counter, Evan's voice softened further, turning almost gentle. She spoke quietly, and I couldn't hear her words. But I could see the tension in her shoulders, the way her hands shook slightly when she opened her folder. Evan listened with that patient stillness people crave when they're frightened. He nodded at the right times. He leaned in like he was offering shelter. I moved toward the water station like I'd been told, wiping an invisible spill, performing my function in the room. My phone buzzed again. The message told me not to speak to customers unless spoken to. It told me to smile if I made eye contact. It told me to keep moving. I followed the instructions, because each one felt small, and because each one came with an invisible promise. Do this, and you'll get paid. Do this, and you'll go home. Do this, and nothing will happen. The woman signed a document. Evan pointed to the line, tapped the page gently, and she signed like she was sealing a wound. Relief crossed her face like a wave. She glanced at me and offered a small, apologetic smile, the kind people offer to service workers when they feel guilty for taking up space. I nodded back, trying to look normal. My phone buzzed again with a reminder to keep acting natural. And in that moment, standing there in my gray shirt with my name sewn onto it like a claim, I felt the first sharp flicker of understanding. Not the whole truth, not yet, just the shape of it. This wasn't a job where I cleaned. This was a job where I made other people believe there was nothing to fear. Persuasion. By late morning, the room had trained my body to move the way it wanted. That's the part I still struggle to admit. It didn't take force. It didn't take threats. The uniform did most of the work. The set did the rest. After an hour of looping between the water station and the counters, wiping spotless surfaces, adjusting a chair that hadn't been moved, my movements began to feel automatic, like I'd always worked there. The cart stopped squeaking, or maybe my ears stopped noticing. The space absorbed me the way it absorbed everything. Customers came in one by one. Not a crowd, not a rush, spaced out as if scheduled. Each one arrived carrying some form of panic, tucked behind polite words. I couldn't always hear their stories, but I recognized the posture, the tight shoulders, the way they held folders like shields, the way their eyes kept dropping to the counters and then darting back up to Evan's face, searching for a sign. Evan never rushed anyone. That seemed like kindness at first. But the longer I watched, the more I realized patience can be a tool. When you don't rush someone, you make them feel respected. When you make someone feel respected, you earn their trust without asking. Evan's voice stayed low and steady. He repeated phrases that made people's breathing slow down. "You did the right thing coming in," he told a tired man in his 50s who looked like he hadn't slept in days. "We can fix this," he told a young woman who kept twisting a ring on her finger until her knuckles turned white. "I'm going to take care of you," he told an older woman who kept glancing at the door as if she expected someone to follow her inside. Each time, I watched the same thing happen. Their shoulders dropped. Their eyes softened. They leaned in. They began to believe the room was safe, because the room behaved like safety. I started noticing what made it work. It wasn't just the plaque on the wall. It wasn't just the counters and the chairs. It was the details no one questioned. The brochures, the pens chained to the counter with little cords, the water station stocked with cups, the hum of the printer behind the wall, the faint scent of disinfectant that implied cleanliness and order, the presence of a custodian in a uniform, wiping things, proving the place had routines. That was me. My phone buzzed frequently, always from the same unknown number. The instructions were brief, written like reminders, like I'd already been trained. Move close into the lobby when someone enters. Stay by the water station during signatures. Don't stand too still. Don't hover near conversations. Smile when acknowledged. Never contradict Evan. Never improvise. The strangest part was how quickly those instructions began to feel like my own thoughts. Like I was reminding myself. Like I wanted to be good at this. Like I wanted to do it correctly. At some point, Evan asked me to take a break. He said it casually, like he was taking care of me too. He pointed toward a hallway behind the counters. "A break room. Coffee in the back," he said. The back hallway felt colder, less polished. The break room had a table, a fridge, a printer, on a metal shelf, and nothing else that suggested people spent time there. No photos, no mugs, no notes. It was a room built to look like a break room, not a room that had ever held someone's day. I poured coffee into a paper cup and tried to steady my breathing. My hands were steady, which almost scared me more. I expected shaking. I expected panic. Instead, I felt a strange, numb focus, like my body had chosen efficiency over fear. A woman entered the break room. She wore a plain blouse and dark jeans, hair pinned back. She didn't wear a uniform. She didn't wear a suit. She looked like someone who could blend into a crowd and disappear. She greeted me by name, like it was natural. She told me I was doing great. I laughed once because it sounded absurd. I told her I'd been wiping air. She smiled, like that was the point. She said people trust the details they don't think about. She said my job was to make the room feel lived in. She spoke with a calm certainty that made me feel childish for being confused. I asked who she was. She didn't answer directly. She said she made sure things went smoothly. I asked what smoothly meant. She looked at me for a long second, then glanced subtly toward my pocket, like she knew my phone would buzz again. When it did, I flinched, and she didn't. She said something that stayed in my head like a splinter. She said I wanted to go home with my money, right? I didn't answer, but my silence was enough. She told me to treat it like a set. Actors, props, timing. She told me not to look behind the curtain. She said if I broke the illusion, it would get messy. She didn't say for who. She didn't need to. When she left, I noticed a folder on the table. It looked like the kind the customers carried. It was open just enough that I could see a name and an address. Not mine. A stranger's. A bank statement. The kind of paper you don't leave lying around in a place that's real. I didn't touch it. That felt like the only control I still had. I left it exactly where it was and walked back out onto the bank floor. The woman with the trembling hands was still there. She had returned, or maybe she'd never left. She stood at the counter with her face flushed, voice sharper now, fear breaking through the relief. I can't lose it, she said. You said this would stop it. Evan's voice stayed gentle. It will, he said. But you have to trust the process. Trust. The word settled on the air like dust. He slid another document toward her. She stared at it like it was a sentence. Her hand hovered above the pen. I moved past them with my cart, trying to look occupied. My phone buzzed again. A message reminded me to be a wall, to stay in my role, to keep the room stable. The woman looked at me. This time her eyes didn't hold apology. They held something raw, more human. A question she couldn't ask, because asking would admit she wasn't sure. She looked at my uniform like it might answer for me. Like my presence could confirm this was safe. I should have spoken then. I should have said something. Anything. A warning, a question, even a clumsy attempt at honesty. But my mouth stayed shut, because silence was part of the room's design, and because if I spoke, the first thing that would happen wouldn't be the truth. The first thing that would happen would be confusion, then chaos, then consequences. I kept moving. That's the moment I hate the most. Not because I didn't know what was happening, I didn't fully, but because I knew enough to feel the shape of wrong, and I still chose to keep the room quiet. A few minutes later, I checked my phone again, almost against my will. The thread of messages scrolled back farther than I remembered. Reminders, instructions, commands. At the top of the thread, there was one message that made my blood turn cold. It said they would need me to sign too. I looked up from the phone, my heart hammering, and Evan was watching me. He wasn't smiling anymore. He didn't look angry. He looked patient, like he'd been waiting for me to catch up. He lifted a hand slightly. Not a wave, not a threat. More like a signal. From the corner of my eye, I saw movement near the entrance. The two men I'd noticed earlier shifted closer, their bodies angled toward me, as if they already knew where I was going to try to run. Evan spoke calmly, as if he were correcting a small mistake. He asked me to come into the office for a moment. I asked why, even though my throat felt too tight to form the word properly. Evan's expression softened, like he was disappointed in me for not understanding sooner. He told me I was part of the paperwork. And the room, the spotless floor, the plaque, the brochures, the air that smelled like order, all suddenly felt like a trap closing gently around my ribs. The manager's office was staged the way the rest of the bank was staged. Desk, chairs, framed photo of a sailboat that looked like it had never belonged to anyone. The door clicked shut behind me with a soft final sound. Evan sat on the far side of the desk and folded his hands, calm and patient. The woman from the break room leaned against the wall, near the door. The two men stood behind me close enough that I could feel their heat. No one touched me. They didn't need to. Evan asked if I was okay. He said it like concern, like he was taking care of me. His voice stayed warm, and that warmth made my skin crawl, because it felt like a net. He slid a folder across the desk. My name was printed on the front, in clean black letters. Underneath was a label calling me a temporary contractor. I told him I'd already signed something. He nodded. He said that was confidentiality. For my protection. He said this was different. He said this was just a formality. Formality is one of those words that shrinks your fear. It tells you you're overreacting. It tells you the problem is your imagination, not the situation. He opened the folder and pointed to a page with a signature line and a blank labeled witness. My stomach twisted. He said he needed me to sign as a witness to the day's transactions, to confirm I'd been present. I told him I hadn't witnessed anything. I said I was just maintenance. Evan's eyes stayed steady. He said, I'd been there all day. He said I'd been seen. He said the customers saw me. He said the cameras saw me. He said my uniform made me part of the environment. He said it gently, like he was explaining something simple to a child. And that was the cruelest part. He made my own presence feel like evidence against me. I told him I wasn't signing anything. My voice came out thin. Evan nodded like that was a normal reaction. He said people get anxious when they don't understand the full picture. He said he wanted to make it easy for me to leave. He slid a pen toward me. He said I wanted to go home, right? He said I wanted to be paid. He said I wanted to forget I'd ever been there. The words hit the part of my mind that was already exhausted. The part that wanted an exit. The part that would accept almost any explanation if it meant the day could end. I didn't answer, but he didn't need my answer. He continued as if I'd agreed. He told me that if I didn't sign, I would still have to live with what I'd seen. He said if I didn't sign, I would have to explain why I was there in the first place. I asked him who I would have to explain it to. Evan smiled faintly. He said, to anyone who asks. The room went quiet. That silence felt engineered too, as if it were a cue, as if there were cameras even in here capturing the moment I broke. I said I could call the police. I said it even though I didn't believe it would save me. I just needed to say something that sounded like resistance. Evan didn't argue. He didn't threaten. He turned his laptop toward me and showed me a paused video. It was security footage of the bank floor. Me, in my uniform, my cart, my mop, the woman at the counter, Evan leaning in. Everything looked exactly like I remembered. Except the footage included angles I hadn't known existed. Close-ups that made my movements look deliberate. A moment where it looked like I leaned toward the woman and murmured something to her. Another moment where it looked like I handed something to a customer. I watched my own body perform gestures I did not remember making. My mouth went dry. I said the footage was edited. Evan's expression stayed gentle, almost indulgent. He asked if I was sure. He asked how I could prove it. He closed the laptop slowly, like he was ending a lesson. He said this was why witness signatures matter. He said it prevents confusion. He said it protects everyone. The woman near the door spoke quietly. She said, I wasn't in trouble, unless I made myself a problem. Her voice was calm, like she was giving me advice, like she cared about my outcome. Not in trouble unless I made myself a problem. The phrase slid into my head, like oil. Evan leaned forward slightly. He said he knew I hadn't done anything wrong. He said that was why he wanted me to sign. Because I was innocent. Because I was just doing my job. Because the signature would match the story that kept me safe. He didn't say it like a threat. He said it like a kindness. And that's what made it work. He offered me an explanation I could live inside. He offered me a version of events where I wasn't a participant, just a witness. And the moment he offered it, my brain started reaching for it like a lifeline. I picked up the pen. My fingers were cold, but steady. I hated that they were steady. I leaned over the paper and signed my name. Evan watched without interrupting, like he was giving me space to do the right thing. When I finished, he took the folder back and placed it in a neat stack. He thanked me warmly. He said it wasn't so hard. One of the men opened the door. The woman handed me an envelope. It was thick with cash, exactly the amount I'd been promised. The weight of it felt obscene. I tucked it into my pocket, like it was proof I'd survived. When I stepped back onto the bank floor, the woman who had been signing earlier was walking toward the exit, clutching her folder. Her eyes were glassy with relief. She glanced back at me and smiled, grateful, like my presence had reassured her. Like I'd been part of the reason she trusted the room. Evan called after her with a warm goodbye. She left. The door closed behind her. The room stayed bright and calm, as if nothing had happened. Evan turned to me and told me to go home and enjoy my day. I pushed my car toward the back hallway, moving the way my body had been trained to move. My phone buzzed again, another message from the unknown number. It told me I understood now. It told me clarity comes at a cost. I stopped walking. My throat tightened. I opened the message thread and scrolled upward, past the instructions, past the reminders, past the warning that they would need me to sign too. Then I saw a message that didn't belong. A message in the thread that looked like it had been sent from my own number, written in my own voice, written in a way that sounded like me when I'm tired and desperate and trying to bargain with the world. It said I would do it. It said to tell me what to say. The timestamp was from 2 weeks ago. I stared at it until my eyes blurred. I tried to remember writing it. I tried to remember receiving the first call. I tried to remember anything that connected me to that message. My memory gave me nothing. It wasn't like forgetting a detail. It was like staring into a clean white wall where a door should be. I walked out of the building with the cash in my pocket, my signature on paper I couldn't take back, and a message thread that suggested I'd been part of this longer than I could admit. Outside, the cold air hit my face like a slap. Cars moved through the parking lot. The sky looked normal. The world acted like nothing had happened. I got into my car and drove. On the highway, my hand stayed tight on the wheel. My mind kept replaying the bank floor, the shine of the spotless tiles, the way the plaque on the wall had calmed me without asking permission. I kept seeing the woman's grateful smile, and it made my stomach turn because she'd looked at me like I was safe. My phone buzzed one last time with a final message. It said, "Clarity is expensive." I didn't reply. I didn't delete the thread. I didn't throw my phone out the window. I just kept driving, feeling the truth settle deeper with every mile. If a bank could be manufactured and still feel real, then reality wasn't a fact. It was a performance people agreed to believe. And the scariest part wasn't that I'd been used. It was that I still couldn't remember when I said yes